Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. This Week in America online, thisweekinamerica.us. When Review calls, Lurline Franklin, our guest on today's This Week in America, one of the most talented and creative individuals that they have ever met, a published poet and creative writer, playwright who produces remarkable writing. Lurline continues to display her amazing artwork at multiple galleries. She teaches elementary art with the Achievement School District in Memphis, where she lives with her daughter. She received her Master's in Arts Education and MFA in Painting from Memphis College of Art. Her recent book, Fabled Truths, Self-Portraits and Poetic Essays, is a wonderful collection of her paintings and poetic essays. Lurline Franklin, our guest on today's This Week in America. Lurline, welcome to the program. It's great to have you with us today.
Thank you. It's glad to be with you.
There are so many interesting things to talk about during the course of the program. Such a fascinating artistic life that you are leading and helping so many people. And I want to go back because in reading the book, you talk about something that happened to you like 25 years ago in North Dakota, a comedy club that made you uncomfortable. And a lot of your work since then has really reflected that. Talk about what happened in that comedy club that had you upset and really doing some deep thinking.
Well, I'm African American, and so the comedy club was in Manor, North Dakota. And if you know anything about statistics, there's not that many black people in North Dakota.
Right.
Really, there weren't any at all. And so knowing the nature of comedy, it's kind of no limits to that, but I was sitting in this comedy club with two of my friends who happened to be Caucasian, and the comedian, he was telling, you know, your standard little jokes, but then he got down and dirty with the racial jokes, and one of them was, swimming to Africa, I forget what he was saying, but he was making a lot of racial jokes, and he was kind of directing stuff towards me. Back then, the Jerry Carroll was in where, you know, you have a lot of oil in your hair as a black African-American style. And he actually pulled a plastic cap off his head, you know, out of his pocket and put it on his head and asked me, was it sitting on his head right?
Oh,
and so after about 30, 40 minutes of this, my friends beside me, this wasn't affecting them at all. So they were just laughing, busting a gut. But shoot, I couldn't laugh. It was really like he was being racist, really.
Yes.
And so he stopped it with me, and then he started talking about North Dakota women, how they're shaped up, and they're kind of maybe some of them, I don't want to go into the stereotype, but some of them are kind of like with short legs and portly. And he said, North Dakota women, snow-fed pigs. That's what he more or less said about them. And the two friends who I was sitting with, they happened to be overweight, and they happened to follow in with the stereotype of that. And they stopped to laugh. And so what I started to think about was that thin line where we become the joke and the other person is the one who's a spectator just directing the joke towards us. What's really funny and what's not? And then I started like exploring like stereotypes that were just not, they weren't really beyond, they weren't limited to racial.
Right.
And I found out as I was doing these portraits that you could go on and on and on because, let's say you're a white man, people could say that you're privileged. If you happen to wear glasses, they could say you're a nerd. And it's so many little things, stereotypes that we can pile up, you know, on a person. And it's like we can't really escape. We're connected to each other in that way, and we can't really escape being a joke. So that experience in that nightclub, it kind of carried along with me. And over the years, it built with other ideas and other experiences that I had that had to do with people and differences and and people making fun of other people.
Well, and in your book, Fabled Truth, Self-Portraits and Poetic Essays, you really get us thinking. And in that situation, and you're in that situation, everybody's finding it funny until they're suddenly the butt of the joke, and all of a sudden the comedian's not that funny anymore. And it really does get you thinking. In the book, you talk about easy but uncomfortable self-portraits, poetic essays. Talk about some of the social issues that you address in Fabled Truths.
Well, the first issue, I address stereotypes people have about women in general. It's a poem that I have in there about beauty queens and how it's so easy to just, based on your past now, it's so easy to judge a lot of those women as, for one thing, we think they're shallow. We may assign them as being stupid. And now all that stuff and all those stereotypes are kind of based on, they're based on stuff that we were probably told as a child and things that we saw in the media. And it leaves you to question, what is really, do we really have a pure thought in our head, or is it just kind of stuff that we inherited by other people? Like people say. People say that all the time. People say that.
Yeah.
And then it's
reinforced, so, and suddenly we start believing it automatically without giving it any thought on our own.
Yeah, that's why I'm saying they're easy. It's so easy to do that. It's so easy to do that as opposed to balancing. It's so easy to go with a black or a white idea than try to balance that gray.
You know, something you talk about that really resonated with me, resonated as I'm reading it, I'm sure with other people as well, how quickly we are to judge. And you talk about those people, other people not like us, and we usually give them a matter of seconds before we formed an opinion. That happens way too often, doesn't it?
Well, it happens so often. It's like for people to say that they don't have prejudices and they don't see differences and stuff, it's a lie. I mean, you can't help but do that. Because if you're, let's say you're anti-racist, you know, you don't see color, you don't see, the very fact that you're saying that you don't see color tells me you have a reference point inside your head that does know what that means, seeing color. So you need to own up to what that is, because even though you might not agree with a racist thought or a sexist thought or something, the very fact that you're reacting to it tells me that somewhere inside your head you have a reference point to it. So you are, in that sense, connected to that notion of racism, and you're connected to the people who might be your most blatant racist or sexist.
It's almost suddenly, if I say that, okay, I don't have a racist bone in my body, I don't see color, all of that, you're saying probably subconsciously you do, and you have to understand that before you can deal with it.
Before you can deal with it, that you got to acknowledge. You can't fix something you don't acknowledge that's not in there.
Yes.
I mean, don't beat yourself up silly, you know, but just kind of say, yeah, that's there.
And learn how to deal with it at that point. Yes. Yes.
Yeah, and that's, you know, and that's when you have your people who are like a lot of people were saying, you know, it's not so much the white hood wearing people that you just cannot hate no one, that you can't stand. It's those people who are middle of the road who claim that they ain't got no dice to throw in this game called racism, sexism, any other ism. That say that they not involved. I don't see that. I'm not a part of that. That's the people who really need to examine themselves more than anything.
The book is so fascinating. Fabled Truth, Self-Portraits and Poetic Essays. This is by Lurlin Franklin. Her website is lurlinfranklin.com, and that's L-U-R-L-Y-N-N. If you go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, a direct link that will take you directly to Lurlin's website, book available at bookventure.com and the bookstore there as well. It's interesting because I know you deal with young children, and they come to you, and you said you can almost see the ones that have been beaten down already at such a young age. That's so tragic to see. How difficult is that to witness that and then try to open them up? And you use art as a way to open them up.
Well, most of the kids that I teach are from very impoverished areas, so they come into the game of education and probably into the game of life in general feeling like they don't have anything to offer. The power of art is that you can put a blank sheet in front of a person and there's nothing there, and you can inject your thoughts on that sheet of paper and make it into something. And so that idea that materially you don't have anything can be like totally counterbalanced and just kind of wiped out through art, because you can create something from nothing. And so I think I presented it to them in a way where it's like it seems magical to them.
And this fascination with art, and you are such a gifted artist in so many ways, came at an early age. I understand you were 16 and got your first job painting murals, but it was a while before you accepted that. You talk about an epiphany in 2008 when it really hit you what you could do with this gift and how you could serve humanity with it. Talk about that moment when you realized art is a way that I can use to do some good, to do something positive in this world.
I'm trying to think about the day in 2008. I had so many crazy epiphanies.
Well, and this one was pretty much that where you realized your artistic gifts, you could use those to help your desire to serve humanity, and you're doing that with the kids that you're working with. And you talk about kids comes into the class and you're telling them to draw and that type of thing, and they're like, I can't do this. And then you've had gifted artists, some that have won contests, and they didn't come to you as artists. It was something when they opened up, they were able to learn. That has to be rewarding and maybe life-changing for some of these students, isn't it?
Well, I do believe that it is life-changing, and it grounds them. I think that art in general, by the very nature of it, hits kids at their foundation. Now, they may have grown up in a household, perhaps. I'm not saying every kid is like that, but I can usually tell which children are, where they're taking that repertoire of that troubled childhood, they're taking it on into their life and into my classroom. And the kid that says, I can't do something, or I can't do that, and they haven't even tried, I see that as a psychological issue. And I tell them, okay, that's really not you saying that. I said, maybe somebody in your life told you that you couldn't do something. And I said, that voice is still, that person is still in your head. Maybe some kind of authority figure told you couldn't do it. But I said, that voice is still inside your head. I said, I know you want to get the voices out of your head, because that's pure crazy, right? And so I'm talking to them on that kind of level. And when they think about it and listen to themselves, they do realize that is not their voice. Some of them tell me the person in their life who kind of beat them down. And it's a major epiphany to them once you get, because art is about, really, you kind of like, you got to quiet your mind to do it. It's not so much you using your hands. It's mostly about quieting your mind enough so you can see something, it can reflect back into your brain. Your synapses are all connecting up. And you can relay that on a blank sheet of paper. And I tell them that everything, really, just look around the room. None of this stuff existed. Just existed. Outside, it had to be inside of somebody's head first. This table right here. Somebody had to think about that before they created that table. That table had to be an idea. Your shoes have to be an idea first.
And in your case, in dealing with so many, I'm just thinking it begins basically with a sheet of paper and the instructions, draw something, and out of that comes literally, again, life-changing, life-altering experiences. Time going by way too quickly. I'd mentioned you live with your daughter. What kind of world is she going to live in? Are we making any progress as society, humanity?
I think that we are making progress. It does not feel like that right now in this climate, but I'm feeling like this climate that we're in now, with all this unrest and all these racial issues and sexist issues and junk, I feel like that stuff was there kind of all along, and it's surfacing now. And I view it like this. It's like the light is shining on the roaches. And so since you see they're there, it's time to spray them. So things are coming out that are supposed to come out. Like when I first started these books, 16, 17 some years ago, and the concept, I was embarrassed, really, that I could really come up with all this racist stuff, meaning that I'd have to own that those thoughts filtered through my head.
Yes.
It was a part of me then that couldn't connect it to back then because people weren't out in the open about these issues. But now it's like, its time has come. And so, in terms of just kind of my daughter, I just feel like this stuff, a light being shown on all of this, I think it's going to make things better, but it's like chaos before order.
Very thoughtful. It's a different way to look at it, and it makes perfect sense, and it's thoughts that you reflect in the book. I've got a minute or so left in the program. If people read Fabled Truth, Self-Portraits, and Poetic Essays, what do you hope they get out of reading the book? What's the takeaway you would like for readers to get from the book?
I would like people to just read the book, and look at the pictures, keep it real about what they believe or don't believe. Just know what you believe, not what Grandpa Lucas said, not what, you know, your mama said. Just look things square in your face, in the face. Look at yourself square in the face, and just be truthful about what you believe. Just please be truthful about what you believe, and hold people accountable so they can be truthful about their stuff too. And now I feel like that's the only way we're going to evolve. That's the only way we're going to evolve.
I said in the beginning, a wonderful collection of her paintings and poetic essays, and the essays and the paintings, so thoughtful, and they all have a message, and it's just, it's a book that needs to be read. Fabled Truth, Self-Portraits and Poetic Essays, Volume 3, three of the volumes are out there. You can find information at lurlinfranklin.com. Also, of course, at bookventure.com in their bookstore. And you can link on directly to Lurlin's website by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Lurlin, a pleasure to have you on the program. You're doing really important work out there, especially in the classroom and changing lives for these children and getting them going in the right direction and giving them the tools they need to be successful in life. Thank you for sharing all of this with us on the program today.
Thank you so much for having me.
It has been our pleasure. And once again, Lurlin Franklin, Fabled Truth, Self-Portraits and Poetic Essays, information and a direct link at our website, thisweekinamerica.us. We're back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.